Sorry to interrupt, but the clock is ticking. I am so delighted to be here and to see all of you, so many old friends. For those of you that don't know me, I was a member here for a number of years and moved away 2 years ago, and it's just a delight to be back here. And I'm feeling quite a bit of humility this morning, because when Edie asked me to come and do this service, I eagerly said, yes, of course. And then I realized that it's the first sermon of the new year. And I thought, oh gosh, I have to provide enough hope to get people through Donald Trump and his tweet storms and the possibility of nuclear war and the loss of health insurance and all of that. And then I realized that it's Epiphany. Yesterday was Epiphany. And if you have a Christian background, you know it's a day of great joy. And I want to talk about climate change. So I'm feeling very humble. I ran this, my words, across with some friends in Portland to get some feedback. And that was very helpful. And one important message I got was from Miranda Manners, and she said, you need more jokes. So I don't know if I can accomplish that. And I want to add, too, that in the body of what I'm going to say, when I use pronouns, I use we and I, mostly we, because a part of me still feels very much a part of this community. So with that being said, I'm going to begin by making reference to the sermon I did about 3 years ago, and I know that you all remember it very clearly, but it was reflections on this sermon that got me to today's sermon, so I'm going to review it just very briefly. When I was last here, I spoke about the spiritual challenge of finding hope in dark times. And I was referring, of course, to the threat of climate change and the impending collapse, or the potential collapse, of the Earth's major ecosystems. We talked about our need to act, to do something of consequence on behalf of the planet, even though scientists tell us the bad news, it may already be too late. We spoke of our individual efforts, and no matter how meritorious, they often seem on a planetary scale to be futile and insignificant. But my message that day was that our actions do matter. They are significant, because when we act, we uphold our own sense of dignity and responsibility. We act because we love life, and we refuse to let it be degraded. So in looking back on that sermon, I believe I made a mistake when I focused on our plight as individuals. In attempting to elaborate how we could, one by one, find the strength and the moral fiber to persist against all odds, I completely overlooked the role of the church in the struggle to stay afloat in perilous times. We come to church for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is spiritual sustenance. We come to be inspired and to have our spirit nourished. In dark times and in times of crisis, the need for nourishment is heightened. We should never have to go it alone, one by one. The work is just too darn hard. So as I thought about the ability of our church, and I don't mean this specific church, I'm talking about UU-ism, as I thought about its ability to provide the sustenance that we need, a light bulb went off in my head, and it was an LED light bulb. I realized that right now, Unitarian Universalist principles are neither strong enough nor focused enough to provide us with the spiritual guidance we so desperately need. I believe that UU beliefs, as currently stated, cannot meet the challenge of our changing world. Before you dismiss this idea as the result of me going off to crazy Portlandia for 2 years, let me explain. You all know we're facing a planetary crisis the likes of which our species has never before encountered. You know that in addition to creating havoc with the climate, we've decimated the habitats of millions of species. We've disrupted the vital ecosystems upon which we depend, and we've polluted the air, the water, and the soil. You know, unlike many of our elected officials in Washington, D.C., that scientific consensus tells us we are facing ecocide, the death of the planet. In order to provide spiritual benefit to you and me in the face of this disintegration, an effective belief system would place the Earth itself, rather than human beings, at the center of its concerns. And right now, six of our seven principles focus attention entirely on the importance of human relationships with one another, rather than on the planet. I'll talk about this in a minute, but first, let me assure you I'm not questioning the magnificent work on behalf of the planet that's being done in individual congregations by the UU Ministry for the Earth and by the UUNO, which is an international advocacy organization for climate change education. The UU is populated with people of enormous commitment to sustainability and the health of the planet. If you think for a minute just of the contributions and the accomplishments of this congregation, the solar panels, the community garden with 8-foot tall kale, I mean, who grows kale like that? Except Ramon. The parking lot is populated by fuel efficiency vehicles. The Green Team is responsible for this magnificent document and all of you. I mean, it's amazing what individual congregations can do. But as I said, we face an enormous, enormous ecological challenge. And in order for us as individuals to act, to sacrifice, and to lead, we must have a spiritual support system that guides our hearts and sharpens our minds and focuses our actions primarily towards the health of this planet. I think that our principles fail us because they don't sufficiently account for the world we now live in. The values at the heart of our faith, freedom, tolerance, and reason, are incredibly important. I'm not diminishing them. But they're drawn directly from a secular and deeply anthropocentric playbook. And this has to do with the history of our tradition, which I'd like to take a few minutes to talk about. Historically, Unitarianism and its foundational tenets grew out of the Age of Reason. And you all remember in eighth grade history, it's the Age of Enlightenment. It produced a burst of political and cultural thought at the beginning of the modern world that reshaped the way humans understood themselves. A new paradigm emerged wherein all the gods were taken out of heaven, and in their place, human reason and potential were uplifted. It was, to be sure, not only secular, but radically anthropocentric as a belief system. Humans were newly imagined as the modern measure of all things. No longer children of God, humans were thought to be autonomous, self-interested, and free to do exactly as we please as long as we don't harm anybody else. Our pursuit of self-interest was enshrined in the gospel of capitalism, and our natural right to freedom was written into the scripture of our democratic political institutions, if you've ever read our Bill of Rights or the Constitution. Our relationship to nature was also redefined. Religious mystery and the sacred were obliterated by the flowering of science in its ability to measure and quantify the world. The earth and all creation had become subject to human ownership, manipulation, and control. So enter Unitarian Universalism, or Unitarianism. In 1825, from within this worldview, the American Unitarian Association took shape as a liberal, anti-religious sect. In every way, it was the philosophical child of the Age of Reason. From the get-go, the language and spirit of Unitarianism were cultural and political, never theological. As a denomination, we embraced humanist values: the right to personal freedom, freedom to choose the path of our own well-being and to define our own spirituality. Our morality came not from the constraints or obligations imposed by religion, but by the laws articulated by political theorists and secular philosophers. And we lived on a planet whose forces we could know, modify, and ultimately master. In 1961, we merged with Universalism. After heated debate, the two groups hammered out six principles of core beliefs upon which we could agree, each reflecting the basic principles of liberalism and humanism. This new organization was proudly non-dogmatic and without creed. Instead, we joked about ourselves, saying that our sacraments were doubt, argument, and coffee. Our bumper stickers read, "I'm a UU, honk if you're not sure." Since then, we've gone through periods of turmoil and change. In 1979, not quite 20 years after this merger, the UUA president, Reverend Eugene Pickett, critiqued the six principles, saying, "The old watchwords of liberalism, worthy though they may be, are simply not catching the imagination of the contemporary world. If we are ever to speak to a new age, we must supplement our seeking with some profound religious finds." End of quote. Those old watchwords of liberalism to which Pickett referred are precisely the values we still uphold: the worth and dignity of every person, justice in human relationships, the individual's free search for meaning, the right to one's own conscience, the acceptance of one another, and liberty for all persons. To state the obvious, these six principles are focused entirely on humans. During Pickett's tenure, after years of pressure from various constituencies, the religious canon expanded. In 1985, we acknowledged the significance of five sources of wisdom, which included all the world's major religions, and humanism, including science. And then in 1995, in response to the increased presence of pagans and pantheists in our membership, the sixth source, earth-centered traditions, and the seventh principle were added. As you all know, the seventh principle states, we should respect the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. So, on my exploration of this topic, I went to the UUA website to see exactly how the seventh principle was interpreted. And this is what I found. Quote, "We make a profound mistake when we limit the seventh principle to a merely environmental idea. It is so much more. It is our response to the great dangers of both individualism and oppression. It is our solution to the seeming conflict between the individual and the group." Should I repeat this absurdity? We are mistaken if we see the seventh principle as merely about the environment. It seems to me that even in the face of current ecological crises, some of our national spokespersons interpret the interconnected web of life to be a remedy for struggles between people. Even the language of the principle leaves us with little inspiration to actually care about the earth. We should respect the web of life. I'm sorry. To my way of thinking, respect is a weak and insubstantial way to fathom our profound, if not sacred, relationship to this planet. I ask you, at this point in time, do you think it's sufficient for us to merely respect the earth? Should we not be acknowledging that we live on this planet not simply as an interconnected part, but as a species that is wholly and entirely dependent upon its ecosystems? Should we not proclaim that our very lives depend on clean water, clean air, healthy soil, and biodiversity, all of which we're despoiling at an astounding rate? As I mentioned, in 1985, we also acknowledged the importance of the great wisdom traditions and the results of science as sources from which we draw inspiration. The wisdom traditions articulate ancient beliefs about the nature of sacred reality, whereas science provides us with hard data about the nature of that same reality. Surely we're at a point in time when science and the sacred are working in tandem. Both scientists and forward-looking theologians give voice to the very same message. We must act quickly and decisively if we are to ameliorate the damage we've already done to this planet. From a spiritual perspective, we would do well to heed the words of Thomas Berry, who said decades ago that our spirituality, our very existence, is of the earth. Simply put, he said, quote, "We are earthlings. We come into being in and through the earth. The earth is our origin, our nourishment, our educator, our healer, our fulfillment. At its core, even our spirituality is earth-derived. The human and the earth are totally implicated, each in the other. If there is no spirituality in the earth, then there is no spirituality in ourselves." End of quote. And from a scientific perspective, we're coming to grips with the enormity of climate disruption and ecosystem collapse. We're facing the realization that this planet is our sacred reality. It is clear to me that the Unitarian Universalist humanist-based principles, as currently articulated, are not capable of addressing the planetary laws of physics and biology. The physical reality is we've overshot the Earth's carrying capacity, that excessive consumption of fossil fuels and increasing rates of pollution are degrading the very ecosystems upon which our lives and the future of our children depend. The spiritual reality is we are in danger of destroying the only sacred ground we have ever known. Why are we not, then, privileging the wisdom of science every week in our pews, from the pulpits, in our choirs, and in our prayers? As individuals, we have a limited capacity to reverse the foundational beliefs of our culture. Until our denomination and all of our congregations stand completely and vigorously on the side of the planet, our individual actions will be more difficult to sustain. Our challenge is to realign UU belief and commitment to reflect 20th century reality. We need one capacious principle that reveals the precarious conditions under which we live. A principle that honors the sacred quality of this planet, and one that provides us with the spiritual sustenance for the work that we all must do. I'm hardly alone in this assertion. Among others, Cindy Davidson, a member of UU Ministry for Earth Board of Trustees, recently said, "If Unitarian Universalism is to be relevant to this change, rapidly evolving world, our congregations need to be grounded in a planetary ethic." Isn't it time that every week when we come to church, we are reminded that it is the earth that is primary and humans are derivative? Isn't it time that we take seriously the single most important moral challenge that the human race has ever faced? If we don't grapple with the potential for ecosystem collapse in our church, where can we find hope or guidance or support to carry out the hard work that lies ahead? Our tradition is a fluid one. It can change. GA, I've heard from two people coming back from GA that they're planning to revise the principles. So this might be a good moment in time to make our voices heard. Because we have the capacity to create a religious container that fortifies us, that challenges us to be our best selves, and that provides succor and hope in the face of uncertain times. Whether we are secular humanists or whether we understand the earth as being sacred, our work is exactly the same. Let us begin anew in this congregation, and I should say let us continue in this congregation because you all are doing magnificent work. But we could do more. Privileging the earth in crisis would affect every aspect of our church life. We would preach it from the pulpit. We would teach it to the kids on a regular basis. We'd sing it from the choir. We would focus our social justice activities on planetary health and make common cause with other community organizations. We would fortify the green team and hold adult study sessions. We would divest church funds from fossil fuels. And I'm pretty sure that the UUA has done that. I don't know about this congregation. We would choose board members and regional representatives who support an earth-centered philosophy. We would ally closely with the UU Ministry for Earth, and we would pound on the doors of the denomination, demanding that it lead a massive UU charge to embrace the earth and everything upon it. Unitarianism, in its shining moments, has inspired us to stand on the side of love, to live our lives in the awareness that we are not our own. We are not, nor have we ever, ever been, the measure of all things. But we have within us the spirit of life, that capacity to act in an explosion of love. So let us join together, setting aside all differences, and make common cause in aid of that which is greater than ourselves or any of our grievances. Let us shower our love upon the earth and all of its creatures. We belong to the earth. We did not weave this web of life. We're just a strand within it. And whatever we do to the web, we do to ourselves. Blessed be.